I'm delighted now to introduce Alan Weber. He's mayor-elect of the city of Santa Fe. Welcome.
Thank you. Thank you.
So how do you feel today? What's this? I feel like I'm asking like the Olympic gold medalist who just won the half pipe, but what's this day been like for you?
This has been a day of being tired. The last night was a long night. Also being excited and being grateful. I said this last night, and it really holds true, that there's no greater honor that the people of Santa Fe can confer on anyone than to select them to be the mayor of Santa Fe. And so when you introduced me with that honorific title, I have to grin from ear to ear. It's just a remarkable honor, and I take it both with a sense of humility and a sense of responsibility.
You ran for governor 4 years ago. How did the governor's race influence both how you ran this race and how you see the problems of our city and our state together?
Yeah, good question. I think having done it once before, I had a great deal more awareness of what a campaign really is and what the candidate's role is and when to be clear that I had important things I wanted to have part of the campaign and when I should simply let the campaign team do the work of running the campaign. I also had the benefit in the campaign for governor. Nettie Olguin was my campaign manager. She was the campaign manager for the mayor's race. So we knew each other. We knew how to work with each other. We didn't have to start from scratch. I knew what some of the mechanics were. I knew what it would take to put together a team, what the key positions were. I knew how much work it was. It wasn't a mystery. And I knew what the actual tasks at hand would be, both physical but also emotional, how to keep a sense of balance and equilibrium. Because if you've tracked campaigns, not just here but all over the country, you'll often see people suffering a meltdown or some sort of a unanticipated mistake, a self-inflicted wound often. And so part of it is just the sense of don't get too high, don't get too low, don't get caught up in the things that are not really important. And I would say I was the beneficiary of, just to put it out on the table, the candidate's always the candidate, but the team that is running the campaign is really quite remarkable. And there's no substitute for a team of people who work hard, know what they're doing, have an enormous amount of talent and commitment. And I was the beneficiary of that at every level, both the paid staff and the volunteers.
You were endorsed by Tim Keller, the new mayor of Albuquerque. How do you see the relationship between the two cities? Do mayors work together? Are you like a kind of a club?
The Club of Mayors. Well, there is a conference of mayors, and there's in New Mexico. There's obviously the mayors do work together and talk to each other. If you follow the politics of New Mexico, we've been stymied in the past because the mayor of Albuquerque and the mayor of Santa Fe have not worked collaboratively. They've disagreed on policy issues or political philosophy or political ideology, and as a result, I think the whole state has suffered. So I think we're going to be benefited both in Santa Fe but also in New Mexico by the fact that Tim and I have a great deal of regard for each other. We have similar experiences in the private sector and in entrepreneurial undertakings in business and in business education, learning how to be a good manager, how to be a good leader. I supported Tim in his run for mayor because I think he has enormous talent. He's one of the brightest rising stars in New Mexico. And he and I have already had some very preliminary conversations about ways we can collaborate.
What are some of those ways? What are the issues where you can come together?
Well, there are a number. The first one that comes to mind is economic opportunity up and down the I-25 corridor. There's an idea that's been around for quite a while, but nobody's picked it up and run with it, largely, I think, because of the political differences between Albuquerque and Santa Fe, about talking about something called a cultural corridor. if you think about the experience of driving from Albuquerque to Santa Fe and on up to Taos, for that matter, that's a corridor that is aligned with cultural offerings. And yet we haven't really turned it into an experience where somebody who comes into New Mexico could experience that as a ribbon of cultural experiences, cultural tourism. Boy, I think that's an unlimited opportunity. And so all it takes is working together to do some alignment around that. That's on the kind of good news side. On the less good news side, I think we should be talking about dealing with the opioid epidemic. It doesn't respect boundaries. It doesn't respect city jurisdictions. I just finished reading a really interesting book called Dreamland that talks about the way the opioid epidemic led into the black tar heroin epidemic. And sadly enough, Albuquerque and Santa Fe and northern New Mexico feature in that book. And in fact, I spoke last week with a fellow who had retired from the Santa Fe police force who said to me, "Oh, I know that book. I was part of the Operation Tar Pit that was featured in that." So we really have these issues that don't care about jurisdictional boundaries. The same is true for all of the environmental questions, land use questions, transportation investment, getting between Albuquerque and Santa Fe effectively. We have a train. How well we use it is an open question. So I think Tim, and frankly, Tim and I also share concerns over, if you start with the opioid epidemic, you end up talking about policing and public safety. So make a list: water, environment, policing, economic opportunities, art, culture.
And some of these are local issues, some of them are state issues, and some of them are issues that, in the absence of federal leadership, there are things that mayors and smaller jurisdictions are having to deal with, like it or not.
And frankly, I think it's, if you don't pay attention to the issue of resources and money from the feds, I think local solutions, and particularly New Mexico created local solutions, are much more likely to be a good fit for Santa Fe and for Albuquerque, for our state. I think there are a lot of things that you asked me earlier about mayor's race, governor's race. There are some things that you learn from the governor's race that really are applicable in the case of the mayor's race, and that is the benefit of solutions that are our solutions, that fit us, that fit our history, that fit our culture, that fit our diverse population. And so rather than thinking there's a plug-and-play solution that can be ported in from Florida or Texas and applied to New Mexico or Santa Fe, I think what we're seeing with the federal government becoming more and more ineffective in actually getting things done, setting policy, the states and the cities that are nimble and aligned and able to work collaboratively are going to be the places that win. And I said when Tim was elected that I thought that was step one of a New Mexico turnaround that was going to be a model for the nation. Because if we can get the alignment up and down I-25 and other parts of the state in the roundhouse. And when I ran for governor, I made a lot of friends down in Las Cruces. I made friends in Silver City. I made friends in Hobbs and in Farmington and Gallup, Taos. And that is the right way to think about it. If we have a New Mexico strategy where the cities and communities are all working collaboratively and the roundhouse is now potentially part of where problems go to get solved rather than good ideas go to die, I think the potential for the state's future is unlimited.
There are some kinds of issues where the federal and local conflict. For example, right now, I mean, Santa Fe is a sanctuary city. We're having raids by ICE agents. How do you deal with that as a city when federal law trumps local law?
unfortunate choice of words. But
I'm sorry.
But we'll let you have it. You deal with it by pulling the community together and being unified and having our values and our policies speak loud and clear and being part of a network of cities that are unwilling to buckle to wrong-headed and often racist notions. And I think Santa Fe is a largely united city around the idea that our history, our culture, our strength is our diversity, and that we're going to stand together around that as a city policy and a way of having a city that not only welcomes immigrants, but hopes immigrants have a great shot at a good life. You know, it's not enough to play defense. We're not just going to be content to say we're going to protect people who live here. We want to help people who live here earn a good life and be part of our community and not hide in the shadows. And that's partly what the mayor has to speak up about, but it's what citizens speak up about. It's what neighborhoods talk about. It's what I heard on the campaign trail, that people care about it, and that's part of our identity.
Now, this has not been as divisive a race as some perhaps past mayoral races, and maybe that's because of ranked choice voting. Nevertheless, you know, there are those whose candidates didn't win. There were five candidates, and people who have maybe different visions about the future of the city. How do you see bringing people together now going forward?
Well, there are a number of things that I want to do to signal that I meant it when I said we were going to be one city, not a divided city. First, I'm going to try to sit down with every single person who ran for mayor and have a quite constructive conversation about what their agenda would have been if they had been elected. There were a lot of great ideas advanced in the mayor's race, and not all of them were mine. I have no illusion about the talent of the people who ran for mayor and their capacity to really contribute. So one conversation is a kind of a end of the campaign discussion about lessons learned and agenda going forward with people who put themselves on the line for the same job I was running for. Another part of my going forward program is to have a continuation of the house parties that I had when I was running. You know, my belief is that it's really a mistake to separate how you run from how you govern. That if you go out into neighborhoods and have house parties and listen to people in their living rooms when you're running for mayor, you should do it after you're elected. I also have said I would, as mayor, have city council meetings in every district of the city, and I think that's a good policy, to take City Hall to the people rather than making the people come to City Hall. I will look very carefully at representation in the city government, in hired roles, but also volunteer roles, boards and commissions and task forces, so that people from all over Santa Fe have a chance to participate in Santa Fe. And I think those are some going-in ideas that will, I hope, not only send a signal, but also create the reality of one city. The other place where I'm going to have to focus very quickly is in the area of the budget. The mayor, for the first time, will be writing and producing a budget, obviously in conjunction with the existing team that's there. But I'm hoping I'll have enough time to put a few things into the budget that, again, speak to the issue of equity, inclusivity, fairness, and unifying the city so that people feel like there really is muscle to the idea.
What are some examples of that?
Well, I think some examples are, in particular, how we treat the south side of the city with programs, with investments, with parks, with amenities. Some of it will be in the budget, but I've already had conversations with some people who run nonprofit organizations about what we can do this summer to take programming to the south side that people already have in the downtown area, say, but we haven't really carried across the city. I had and a lot of this comes just from listening to people in house parties or in roundtable conversations with young people with particular interest groups. And so at one event one of the young people said to me, you know, I really think the summer movie series is great at the Rail Yard, and I really think the summer music program on the Plaza is great. Why don't we do that on the South Side? And the answer is we should. There's no reason we can't do that on the South Side. We can have a pop-up movie screen. You know, it's not impossible to put up a movie screen in a park and have food trucks show up and have people with blankets and picnic dinners enjoy a summer movie. It happens all over. It doesn't just happen. It happens not to happen yet on the South Side. We can do music. We can do theater. We can do dance. We can do culture. We can really integrate the whole city with the same kind of offerings that are perceived to belong to the downtown, but replicate them.
There are many issues about the budget. One is balancing it without raising taxes. There have been audits. There have been some real questions raised about where our money is going, whether we know really where it's going. What's your perspective on this? What kind of changes do you envision?
This is a big issue. And it's an issue not just of financial management, it's an issue of trust. At the bottom, it's about, do people trust the city? And again, people have long memories in Santa Fe. They remember what happened with the park bond money. They remember what has happened with water money. They think about, does the city do what it says it's going to do? I think there are a number of steps that need to be taken on several issues. One is to look at the budget and just see what our financial situation is and what our exposure is. And I talked on the campaign trail about having a contingency plan for a recession or for a forest fire. You know, there's been some talk about, with the dry winter we had, how much exposure we have for a potentially difficult summer with forest fires, which could then impact tourists coming to Santa Fe, which then impacts the budget and GRT. And unfortunately, there's about a 2-month lag between when we experience the drop in revenue and when we get the data that show that it happened. So part of it is fiscal planning and fiscal analysis. Second thing that we're all, I think, aware of is the findings in that fraud report. And I think part of the early job of the next mayor is to sit down and go over that audit report and not only sit down with the finance committee and the person who is overseeing the implementation of solutions as recommended in the report, but sit down with the people who wrote the report and go straight to the source and say, you know, I'm a new mayor. I want to hear from you directly what you think the report means and whether the city's on the right track in dealing with it. It's not that I don't believe or trust the city employees. It's I'm new. I get a fresh start. I want to hear directly what that report, the writers of that report, say they think it means and how it should be interpreted.
There are people who have talked about how you have leadership experience from the private sector as an executive, and I would imagine that this speaks to some extent or to a large extent to precisely the things we're talking about, budgets, management, and so on. How do you feel you can use that experience? And at the same time, what are the differences between running a business and running a city, holding public office?
Well, the differences are substantial. And this came up in the campaign, and I have no illusions. I worked in the private sector. I ran a magazine. I ran the Harvard Business Review. I've consulted to big companies, worked with small companies. But I've also worked in federal, state, and local government. So I'm not unaware that executives in private companies have different responsibilities, different goals, different ways of evaluating their performance than somebody who is an elected official who has been given the trust of the public to be a mayor or a member of the council. I think the things that are similar are more a matter of the experience you gain in evaluating people, in putting together a team, in seeing how the pieces fit together in building a strategy, in trying to connect with people, whether you view them as, you know, metaphorically as a customer or as a resident of the city. You want them to have a good experience when they interact with the city. That those are things that are somewhat comparable. The way of keeping score isn't the same. You know, the city's not in business to make a profit. It's in the purpose of a city, frequently talked about in literature about urban planning and urban design. The purpose of a city is to offer people a shot at a good life and more opportunities and more choices for themselves and their families, and to live in harmony and in a place where the future looks bright. That's not driven by profit and loss. That said, you do need to be mindful of the fiscal management of the city's resources. You've got to be a good manager. But a lot of what goes on in the public sector is around that blend of delivering the services that people want in ways that give them confidence that their city government works for them. At the same time that you're working on an agenda that is looking into the future about creating the kinds of choices, options, opportunities, security for people, but not tomorrow, 4, 6, 8 years out.
Well, one of the things that you've talked about is diversifying the economy of the city, economic development. What are we now? We're tourism, the arts, the state. Is that kind of the top three?
And real estate plays a role in it. There's a kind of, if you look at the way Santa Fe constructed itself when it didn't get the railroad more than 100 years ago, it put together a nice strategy. I don't know if they talked about it that way back then, but it was almost an intuitive business model for how to have a successful city. It combined art and culture as a way of attracting tourists and artists who wanted to live here, people who were part of the city different, bohemians, early versions of hippies, early version of artists and cultural creatives before the term ever existed. And that spawned a kind of an attraction to people who wanted to see what was going on, which brings in interested tourists who end up saying, boy, wouldn't it be great to have a house there or to move there? Some people came here because of health issues. So historically, we were a hub for spas and treatments for people with tuberculosis. And so the environment, the clean air, the beautiful sunshine, the mountains, the sky, became, again, an intuitive part of a business model that said, if you want to get out of that over-congested East Coast sick environment with the dirty skies and people having to breathe dirty air, come on out to Santa Fe. We'll take care of you. And that model, and then after World War II, really, the model included public employment. And FDR and the New Deal said, we're going to put people to work. And New Mexico needed that. We also, historically, had a pretty good agricultural economy as a state. There were a lot of people growing during World War II, all kinds of crops that were feeding the troops and the country. That kind of went away after World War II, and we became more of a monocrop or, you know, certain crop economy. But this is a state of farmers, and this is a state of people who know how to grow things and treat water with care. So I think that set of factors are still strengths. We have those strengths. Now we're seeing it augmented by film, TV, digital entertainment, a resurgence of healthcare in a new way, a culinary foodie environment that is more than just growing the crops. It's farm to table at a time when people are very concerned about eating healthy and eating good food, locally produced food. We've got, you know, in the spirit of the time right now, the issue of renewable energy, sustainable economics is a big deal. And we're primed to be a leader in that area. Between our surplus of sun and our low amount of water, we are a model state, a model city for how do you manage a sustainable economy. I think We continue to, you know, blaze the trail with arts and culture. And we're beginning to see the emergence of more out-and-out entrepreneurial technology-based startups. Descartes Labs is our, you know, one of our poster children, but there are others. There's a lot of people doing creative work in medical technology and other areas that really are particular to New Mexico. We're developing a portfolio of strengths. There are startups at the community college flourishing. There are startups at the incubator that are flourishing. So what we haven't done is to take these pieces and convert it into a real, the term I used earlier, a real business model for the city going forward, to actually crystallize it so there's a story we can tell about ourselves, not just to other people, but to ourselves, so we know what our strengths are and we invest in those strengths.
When you think about economic development, how do you see the balance between homegrown businesses and bringing industries in from the outside?
I think it is almost a proven fact that the only way to promote a diversified economy is to grow it from the grassroots up, to demonstrate that you are so smart at your strategy, so committed to your strategy, so good at your strategy, that you then become attractive to other people. I think the idea of trying to bribe companies to come here from out of state is very difficult. It is less difficult to, I think, attract talent. And I, as mayor, my strategy, until I am convinced otherwise, and I'm open to being convinced if people have compelling evidence, but kind of my going in strategy is we ought to be a place that attracts talent. We ought to be a place that attracts the kind of people who want to be part of a startup entrepreneurial grassroots economy. Could be technology, but it doesn't have to be. It can be mom and pop retailing. It can be what we're seeing now with the emergence of brew pubs and all kinds of local grown offerings in food and alcohol and beverages. That's grassroots, but it's a national movement. So if we can become the kind of place where people say the next cool place to do a startup is Santa Fe, and we're already here and we're glad, we just didn't know how much cool stuff was already going on, and the new administration has really lit up the network. So the network that exists is waiting to have the lights turned on, and then we see who's here, and then we work more collectively and collaboratively to make those connections. That's a big plus. And it may also happen that as it becomes prohibitively expensive to live in Silicon Valley, in San Francisco, the Bay Area, or in Boulder, or in Austin, we become the place where people who are like the folks who came here when we didn't get the railroad, these are the young kind of bohemian saying, hey, we don't need to be in San Francisco to be on the cutting edge of doing cool things. There's this place called Santa Fe where the sky is blue and the sun is beautiful and the mountains are great and the quality of life is unmatched. And now the city's building affordable housing and strong neighborhoods and improving the delivery of city services and investing in cell connections and quality of broadband connections. Let's go do it in Santa Fe, or let's stay in Santa Fe and not ever leave if we're here right now. And I think that's the story we have to tell.
What role do you think the film industry and digital technology plays in all of that? And what's the relationship between the city and the state where the film industry is concerned?
I think first of all, the relationship is great. It's imperative that we all be playing together. We're just too small of a state to have the city and the state competing for winning. It's there's the old saying, we all do better when we all do better, and that's the way I think we have to look at it right now. Film, digital technology, digital entertainment, TV. This is not just the wave of the future. This is the wave of the present. I know enough from my having been founder of Fast Company magazine and really assessing the trajectory of the economy that virtually every business today is technology entertainment and design. You know, Richard Saul Wurman, who started TED, had the letters right: technology, entertainment, and design. And that's what Meow Wolf is. That's what you're doing with this show. You're doing something that is changing the way people get their news, their information, their conversations. This is technology, entertainment, and design. Banks are increasingly about technology, entertainment, and design. So we are Santa. That ought to be in Santa Fe's sweet spot. We're a city where, with our history of various forms of technology, our sense of entertainment, our design sensibility, that's our brand. And when you look at why Meow Wolf is here, when you look at why Descartes Labs is here, when you look at why George R. R. Martin is really doing such phenomenal work for Santa Fe, it's all around storytelling, technology, entertainment, design thinking. I think that is the economy. That's not Santa Fe's economy. That's the world economy. And we are in a position right now, because of the quality of life, the things that we've done right historically, other people have done right historically, we're in a position to really be a hub of our version of doing that our way.
Let's say we do that and we're successful. Every city, and you've mentioned some of them, that have had real economic success also have this huge problem of gentrification, housing becoming more expensive, especially when they are islands of one sort or another, whether it's San Francisco, which is bounded by water, we're bounded by Indian land, national forest, mountains, and so on. How do you, I was asking a friend of mine who's in real estate today, I said, how do you do economic development without gentrification? She goes, you can't. I mean, that was her answer.
Okay.
I was like, oh, come on. So what's your perspective on that?
Well, this is on the national agenda right now. Richard Florida, who wrote the book on cultural creatives, his new book is all about dealing with gentrification. And it's a little bit of a mea culpa from Richard, saying, when I wrote about the creative class and created a strategy for how to make your city attractive to the creative class, I forgot about the law of unintended consequences. And the law of unintended consequences is now punishing places like the cities you mentioned and more, New York. These are mega cities. These are cities that have transcended being cities. They are now in a different level of economic change. And some of it's driven by the policies. Some of it's simply driven by what's happening in the market. You've got, not only do you have these mega cities, you've got four or five mega companies that drive everything. You know, what was being given to try to get Google, Amazon to bring a campus to your, will Facebook come to Santa Fe, and on and on and on. It's almost like, you know, the stadium bidding wars that we've seen in professional sports. What do you do about it? I think what we have to do is, first of all, take the lesson of other cities and try to inoculate ourselves as best we can. We have got to deal with the issue of housing. It starts with housing. It starts with housing that is affordable, that is built in ways that don't just create homes, but create neighborhoods, create a sense of place, because that's what Santa Fe is about, a sense of place. And so if we create housing but no sense of place, we haven't solved our problem. We've simply put up housing. We have to look at innovative efforts that have been made in other parts of New Mexico and other parts of the country. There's a lot of literature about housing trusts, about land trusts, about ways of trying to buffer the market and bring in public participation, so that the notion that the free market should clear everything is really part of what happens with gentrification. It leaves people at the mercy of ever escalating prices. But what you have to think about is this: doing nothing is not an option. Right now, we have a huge problem with affordable housing because we're not building any housing. So to some extent, we're suffering gentrification without the economic benefits. We're seeing a virtually zero percent vacancy rate with rentals, which means that prices are just going to continue to go up. And that's a form of gentrification without economic growth. It's simply landlords get to make more money. So the city has got to have a strategy that looks at neighborhood by neighborhood integrity, livability, quality of life, a real neighborhood strategy, which is why in the course of the campaign I talked about creating a new office, the Office of Neighborhood Associations. Because right now there are no real places where the city can have constructive conversations with neighborhoods individually and collectively. There's a neighborhood network, but the city isn't really created a structure for interacting with that around positive investments, positive strategies. And so it turns into an adversarial relationship rather than a constructive dialogue about protecting neighborhoods while growing the economy, asking each neighborhood what it needs to feel more secure or more livable or just a better place to raise a family.
How much land does the city own that isn't developed, and what your ideas are for that land?
Yeah, well, right now the city is doing, and some of my friends in the mayor's race brought this up, as a result of a series of confrontations or failures, if you will, around building housing in neighborhoods, the city is doing an assessment of its land assets. Matt O'Reilly's working on it. And the question is, what do we own and what can we do with it? And I was at City Hall today. There's been a huge improvement in simply the way the city uses its physical assets to help the budget, to improve the return on investment, to make more money for the city without harming neighborhoods. The next step, which was triggered by a proposal that Peter Ives brought forward to the council that did not succeed as a housing proposal, but did succeed in triggering a review. The next step is an assessment of where the city has land and where it could be developed and what it could be developed for, and what the conversation would be working with neighborhoods around their attitudes toward it. Because we continue to trigger an almost reflexive response of, why are you picking on us? And so rather than doing a one-off series of proposals, I think the right way to think about it is a citywide strategy or a plan that says, we're not picking on anybody. We're going to have not a one-at-a-time approach. We're going to have a really coherent approach where everybody can look at the map and see how we're treating everybody fairly.
I was looking for that map online today and I didn't see it. I'd love to see that map of what city land is.
It's a work in progress, yeah. I think, at the moment.
There are real social gaps in Santa Fe that have to do with poverty, substance abuse, people who have fallen through the cracks. People sometimes call this a tale of two cities, or it's even more than that. Sometimes there are generational problems. How do you see addressing the most vulnerable people in this city, both in terms of getting through to the other side and then addressing root causes?
I think that's a very, very deep question. We do have deep divisions, and some of them are historic, some of them are geographic, some of them, as you say, are generational, some of them have to do with race and culture, and we've got to be honest about that. I think I don't think it plays to our advantage to pretend it's not true. Wishing doesn't make it so. And I think we have to address it in a variety of ways, depending on what the nature of the problem is. If you think about some of the social issues you were just talking about, whether it's mental health, behavioral health, drug issues, that's a place where the city has some resources, but it's not a city-only problem. It's a city-county problem. It's a regional problem. And so I think the city has to be really good at looking at its own resources and its strengths, and looking at the strengths of the county and working collaboratively with the county and with the region to try to get our arms around some of these issues. Because, again, people who have behavioral health or mental health problems, they're not choosing their jurisdiction as a place to have their problem. They're human beings. They're moving around. They're living on the street, or they're trying to get off the street, or they're looking for some help with getting away from substance abuse. And they're not thinking, oh, I'm a city resident or I'm a county resident. They're just trying to get through the day. So I think there is a requirement for more collaboration. I think there's a requirement for more resources. And not always public dollars, tax dollars. I think city needs to be nimble at looking at philanthropy, at looking at grants, at looking at ways to attract other partners to the table. I got a call in the course of the campaign from a woman who didn't identify herself, but she said, I'm calling because I've moved to Santa Fe 10 years ago from LA, and I don't know why we don't have the treatment centers that you have in California and Arizona. I have a friend who is desperately in need of help, and her only option is to get out of New Mexico to find it. And she named off some treatment centers in other parts of the West that are really, I would guess you'd call them the standard, highest standard of treatment. And we don't have them because we don't have the ability to pay for them. It's not about need. It's about dollars and cents in the way we do treatment in the United States. So I think the job of the mayor, the job of the county executive, the county commission, is to put our heads together and say, what could we do to bring our standard up, whether it's taking what's here and making it even better, or adding to it, or making more beds and treatment available, or do we have the ability to bring in some new resources? If we say to people, New Mexico is a very, very important state when it comes to dealing with these issues of social need, the problems of addiction, the problems of poverty. We want to be a place where you come help us prove we can get our arms around it. And I don't know that we would succeed. I know we all already get a lot of help from the Kellogg Foundation in a bunch of ways. We're one of a few states that they've chosen to focus on. But I think the need is so big in our community that we need to simply reach out and get more resources.
Alan Weber, you will be sworn in as mayor next week. What do you think your first actions are going to be?
Well, I have to. My first actions, I already know what they'll be because I've been told what they're going to be. We're going to have a city council meeting. We're going to have a swearing-in ceremony, not just for me, but for all of the new elected officials on Monday evening. And I become mayor Tuesday morning. Wednesday, we have a city council meeting, and there's work to be done to prepare for that meeting and actually organize the government on a going-forward basis. Make appointments to the committees that the elected officials of the governing body are going to serve on. There's a requirement very immediately, not a requirement under law, but just under common sense, to get sit down with the current city manager and the finance people and talk about the budget, to look at what's on the books right now. And then I think there's a lot of work to be done with the existing managers in the city, and to get their view on what's working, what's not working, where the resources need to be applied, where we need to do better jobs, and they have ideas that have simply not been either acted on or brought up yet. It's it's the process of building a team. I think you asked me what's portable from the private sector to the public sector. One of the things that is an absolute truth about all work today is that you're only as good as the talent on your team. That's true in startups. That's true in older companies. That's true in the public sector. It's true in nonprofits. It's true about political campaigns. I was the beneficiary of a remarkable team. So the mayor's job is to create a team, particularly now that we have a strong mayor, to really bring a cohesive team together that wants to execute against a set of goals and objectives that the mayor and the council articulate.
Alan Weber, mayor-elect of the city of Santa Fe, thank you so much for being with us, and we hope to have you back on an ongoing way
thank
on
you.
This program. Thanks for being here.
Thank you for the invitation. I always enjoy our conversations.